On this episode of Baseball Barbercast, Fake Trade Friday. Let's have some fun and cook up some swaps that absolutely, positively will definitely happen. Okay, probably not, but we can have some fun with that as the deadline approaches. We also welcome back a recurring special guest. It's Yuri Karasawa of the Yaku Cosmopolitan talking Rintaro Sasaki's monumental decision to sign with the Miami Marlins, checking in on Ohtani and Murakami and Roki and all those guys, and Foster Griffin. He used to pitch in Japan. And then, of course, it's Friday, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly, and there's a lot of good, a lot of bad, and, oh yeah, plenty of ugly. Let's get to it. It's Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world with more deals than Howie Mandel. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Let's get in the trade kitchen and cook up some swaps.
Oh, man. Open that case. Maybe Tarek Skubal is in there. Maybe he is not. I am looking forward to maybe can I go play some Deal or No Deal? I have Deal or No Deal on the Wii. Maybe I'll go play that this weekend. One of my favorite game shows of all time. Jake Mintz, it's good to see you. It is Friday. It is July 24th. And on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbercast, we're gonna get a little silly with it. Now, later on, you're going to hear a much more productive and insightful and informative conversation with our pal Yuri Karasawa from the Yaku Cosmopolitan. He is the Yaku Cosmopolitan. What am I talking about? The founder himself, one of our favorite baseball interneters, talking all things Rintaro Sasaki signing with the Miami Marlins. And, of course, we'll bounce around some of the other big Japanese stars in MLB and not in MLB yet, but that's going to come later. Before we get there, we have a very silly exercise that I got to be honest, Jake, this is basically the only day on the calendar I think I would really be willing to do that. And that is our opener. Welcome to Fake Trade Friday.
We tend to hate a fake trade, at least ideologically speaking. Fake trades are clickbait. They are pointless. They exist solely to get the people riled up and fired up. Very rarely are fake trades remotely realistic. They are a way for fans to dream and dream irrationally. But today on this show, we are going to lean into our more sensationalist, salacious side, and we're going to cook up some fake trades for the other person to laugh at. Now, disclaimer, these fake trades are not real. We do not actually believe that these fake trades are good ideas. They are solely for entertainment purposes. All right? Do not try these fake trades at home. Is there something somewhat hypocritical about us doing fake trades and then saying fake trades are dumb? Absolutely. But I think it's okay as long as you say it with a giggle on your face. And so what this episode's going to be is a very simple game of who says no. Both Jordan and I have prepared trades for the other. We will present that trade and ask who says no, which team says no. I don't know Jordan's. Jordan does not know mine. I do not have any three-team trades. In fact, neither Jordan nor I involved any prospects at all. These are only big leaguer for big leaguer trades, which we were very intentional about. I am so excited. This is going to be a blast.
Yes, and before we get started, we each have at least three. Maybe we'll throw in some bonus ones at the end. I do think that the timing of this exercise is important. This part in the calendar, particularly for our job, once we get past All-Star, but not quite to the deadline, is kind of a slog because you know teams aren't ready to actually make deals yet, but we know we're all already thinking about the deadline. So normally, this is not an exercise I like to engage in. However, this is the perfect time to do so, and so we will do our best. Now, Jake's introduction there makes me think that he's really cooked up some truly outrageous stuff. We will see how silly we are about to get. And you say, don't try these trades at home. I mean, I was at least, you know, involving players that are likely to be traded. I don't know. Maybe you were going so far off the board that we were. Okay. I just want to say we're not
Juan
just coming
Soto
up with trades
Andy
based
Pahes.
On. Right. Right. So, okay. So hopefully we are at least coming up with things that could maybe plausibly happen. But because we are focusing only on major leaguers, which is so rare nowadays to see major leaguer for major leaguer trades. There is the as we know, the high percentage of trades that happen this time of year are involving prospects. But you know what? I think this is going to be a more enjoyable listen. And that's our job. We're trying to entertain you folks. And there are parts of these we're like, no, this is a good idea. There's like 10% of me with all these. I'm like, yes, I do believe this should happen. But Jake Mintz, start us off. Go. You go ahead and go first and give us your first fake trade.
The Detroit Tigers send left-handed starting pitcher Tarek Skubal to the Pittsburgh Pirates for utility man O'Neill Cruz.
One for one.
One for one. Skubal for Cruz.
Oh my God. Who says no?
Who says no?
The Detroit Tigers probably never speak to the Pittsburgh Pirates ever again. would be my answer to that.
Yeah. Okay.
So what's the
so
case
we'll
there?
Throw in
what's
some,
the case there?
We'll throw in. Great, we found a starting point. Let's throw in some more interesting pieces. You know, this is good GM fodder. How about Carmen Majinski? Are you interested, Scott Harris and Carmen Majinski?
Slightly more, yeah, but again, this is
a
deal.
More?
If I'm
there's a lot
I'm
of
Scott
team
Harris
control there.
Okay, that's true. What is O'Neill Cruz right now? He has not played in several months. I don't know what position he plays. He also is not. Okay, so I'm not sure. I think you should be really starting with a pitcher more than O'Neill Cruz. If I'm Scott Harris, but you know, now why do the Pirates need? I guess
why do the Pirates need Tarek Skubal?
Is he
going to
be? No, hold on. Is he eighth inning? Right, we're trying to patch up the bullpen.
Well, we can move any of those other starters to the bullpen. We move Bubba Chandler into relief. We throw Jared Jones in the pen. The thing here is, you know, O'Neill Cruz has a couple more years of control. Could be a really dynamic position player for the Tigers. If you're the Tigers, you're kicking the can on this year anyway. If you're trading Skubal, and so who cares if a guy's hurt right now? Now, as a one-for-one, I will admit that maybe this is unrealistic. So you know what? Sure. I'll go ahead and throw Carmen Majinski in the mix. Okay?
Wow. Okay. Okay. So just to be clear.
Cruz and Majinski.
Okay. And just so, again, my answer remains the same. If we're focusing on the name of the game, the answer is the Detroit Tigers say no so fast. If you're asking me whether the Pittsburgh Pirates would trade a guy who is not currently playing and someone who they've already moved to the bullpen because they don't have room for him in the rotation, would they trade those two players for Tarek Skubal? Yes, they would do that.
Okay, great. Your turn.
All right. Hey, you know what? Let's stick with the Pittsburgh Pirates for a much more simple one. All right.
Okay.
Mitch Keller and Wilbur Dotel to the New York Mets for Luke Weaver. Oh. How do you feel about that?
Can you say it again? I feel like I'm at the spelling bee.
Mitch Keller. I'll use it in a sentence. Mitch Keller, who has is still under team control for a few more seasons at a costly price for the Pittsburgh Pirates, but not for the New York Mets. Wilbur Dotel, hard-throwing rookie reliever. Pirates need bullpen help so badly. Luke Weaver, come on down.
Yours is way better than mine. It's less funny. I'm not like laughing at your proposal, but it is more realistic. Who says no? I think Jordan, very good. Very good, Jordan.
Uh-oh. Are we doing a game of who says yes?
I think the Pirates say no.
They still like Mitch too much?
I think they like Mitch too much, and I think they kind of like Wilbur Dotel. I think Wilbur Dotel...
They do like Wilbur Dotel.
Throwing the Wilbur Dotel in here, I know that we said we would keep things relatively relevant, but Wilbur Dotel's kind of nasty. Is he ready to be a late-inning reliever right now? Probably not. It's exactly the type of guy that the Mets would be interested in. I also think that like Mitch Keller as a Met, I don't know if that would work right away. Like, I just think that he has not been very good this season. And I think that if the Mets gave away Luke Weaver for Mitch Keller, the fan base would start sharpening the pitchforks.
Yeah, that part. So that's interesting because I think you first said that the Pirates would say no, but you think that the Mets fan reaction. I think the Mets
would say yes, but the Mets fans would say no.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, the way I was thinking about this is Weaver also is not a rental and he's been having a terrific season. Just the instability in the Mets rotation, I just feel like acquiring someone that I feel like they could do something with Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller's not having a good season. He is trending in the wrong direction, but he's still someone that has talent and I think has innings in him and has team control that I could imagine the Mets looking at him and be like, we can make him better. But I don't disagree with you that Mets fans would probably be a little bit underwhelmed by that return if they are.
I also think that the Mets would be more likely to get a younger player if they are to trade Luke Weaver. I just think that that's
right.
Which I think is going to be the answer to like all of these that we're doing, to be fair.
Yes. 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 All right. Back to you.
The Boston Red Sox, losers of one in a row.
Oof.
Trade cold. Left-handed starting pitcher Peyton Tolley to the Los Angeles Angels for Zach Neto, shortstop.
Okay, so this is perfect because I guess our producer lied to us because I have one that is right up the alley here. I have one very similar to this that is much grander. So this is good. This is a good pivot to make me look a lot more ambitious. So let's just
you
build
look
off
dumb.
This, okay.
Okay, great.
Oh, I'm not saying I look dumb. I just got crazier with this one because I had the same idea. I mentioned Zach Neto to the Red Sox. On the last pod, we've now got some reporting that there's maybe some steam there. Let's get way crazier here. Ready? Zach Neto and Joe Adell for Marcelo Meyer, Jaron Duran, and Connelly Early. Okay. Now, did I overstep a little too far there with Connelly Early? Now, here's what's fun about this one. The reason why I didn't want to touch Tolley. Yeah, I just love Tolley, so like Tolley to me would be
he's
untouchable.
So basically. If I was the Red Sox, the answer is the one to that I proposed, the Red Sox say no because Peyton Tolley is amazing. And the Red Sox, now that I'm really digging into it, have too many injured starting pitchers to deal a guy that is alive right now.
Correct.
They would need to wait for
Crochet
or Early or Ranger Suarez to get back.
Right.
But for your proposal, what do they need Joe Adell for?
To be better than Jaron Duran and be right-handed and play left field. I also thought about including Sam Bachman in this trade for the Angels, or going back to towards Boston. This is, by the way, this would be five former first round picks, I think, involved in this trade. Duran was
and
not a first
Jaron
rounder.
Duran.
Or I guess four former first round picks, Meyer, Bachman, Adell, Neto. Here's what I like about this monstrosity is that in reality, none of these players are doing very well. but you could also argue that all of them do have real trade value, whether that is Marcelo Meyer, whether that is Jaron Duran, I guess. Connelly Early, who's currently injured but working his way back, he was having a solid rookie season. Adell and Neto have both trended in the wrong direction from last year, but both have team control. And Zach Neto is the toughest one, and we will probably continue to have conversations about him over the next week or so, because he looked like a five-win shortstop. That is with multiple years of team control. That is not something you can just find. So at the same time, he's striking out so much this season. His defensive metrics have gone completely in the wrong direction. So I don't really know how the Angels are going to value him, but I would not be surprised if he's on the move. Now, as for which of our trades, our Angels-Red Sox trades, is more ridiculous or more
Can
likely?
I say one more thing about Neto?
Know. Yeah, go ahead.
For all those things that you said about Neto, he's still a shortstop with a 118 OPS plus.
Yeah.
Like, he is a franchise-type player. That is why the conversation about him moving or not moving is so interesting. That is why I think that my trade, as unlikely as it is, makes some iota of sense, because teams are always going to want to acquire the controllable position player over the controllable pitcher because they are more dependable, more reliable over the long run. Which of these teams say no? I think the Red Sox say no to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone says no to yours.
Yeah. Marcelo Meyer is an interesting trade chip, I think, to think about. I don't know what his value is at this point.
What do the Angels need with Jaron Duran?
That's a good question. I think that would be... Now, again, you're just swapping corner outfielders who are not really doing what they need to be doing. I think Adele for Duran, like, not one for one, that doesn't make any sense. But, again, Jaron Duran is playing every day in left field for the Red Sox and has been the second worst hitter in baseball. Okay, the upgrading over him does not take much. And I think that they'd be better off with someone playing that is right-handed in that position, even if he's batting sixth and has a low OBP, he's at least slugging. That's why I don't hate that swap. What do the Angels need Duran for? You're just buying low and hoping that he returns to being an all-star level outfielder.
Yeah. SoCal guy, Jaron Duran.
SoCal guy.
You grew up Marcelo Meyer also. Down the highway from...
Exactly.
From Angel Stadium. So, all right, I will go.
You know, there's something there. All right, go ahead.
I think everyone says no. All right, I will do this one. Shea Langeliers, catcher, Oakland A's, to the New York Yankees for Jasson Domínguez and Will Warren, starting pitcher.
Okay. You should have started with Will Warren because really anytime you're making a Yankees trade proposal that starts with Jason Domínguez, you kind of like immediately lose credibility.
You're like, nah, it's not real.
it's as lazy as it gets. So I'm definitely docking you points for that. I think Will Warren is an excellent. Is he good enough to be a headliner for Shea Langeliers? I'm not quite sure, but I do like what you're thinking there. I think you're onto something. I think you still have to.
You could take Luis Heel
or Elmer would be the other one I would consider throwing in there.
Do you want Volpe?
But yeah, sure. For some reason they want him. That's fine with me. If I'm the A's, I'm looking for as much pitching as possible.
Austin Wells?
And Will Warren is a nice start, but I still think the A's say no to this.
You could have Austin Wells.
Great. Again, you're not Ooh. Fulfilling what I'm asking for. I need more pitchers.
Cash?
You're just like giving them $50 million.
Just a lot of cash?
Their revenue share, the check isn't enough. Although, well, I don't even remember what the deal is with the A's getting revenue sharing with their move and leaving Oakland. So, I don't know. But anyway...
Here's my Jason Domínguez argument. I understand. Yep. Here's my Jason Domínguez argument and why I have included him. It's almost like he's included in so many Yankees fake trades that it's now cool to include him again. Like we've now
come back around.
The way around. Yeah. Especially with Judge coming back, presumably at some point. Like the road for playing time for Jason Domínguez, I guess, remains as hazy as ever. Trent Grisham leaves in free agency. Does that open things up? Maybe. Is he the opening day starter fielder next year? I guess. I don't know, man. I get rid of him. And then the Yankees are going to have one too many starting pitchers whenever Carlos Rodon gets off the IL. With Schlittler, Ryan Weathers, Will Warren, Max Fried, Gerrit Cole, and Rodon, they probably end up moving someone to the pen. I mean, Will Warren's not starting a playoff game for them. And they have a lot of these other guys under contract for a while. So he is the type of player that teams do covet, that like other teams are interested. It's a ton of team control, and he's already proven that he can handle a lot of innings.
Yeah, I agree with that. No, I don't want to underrate Will Warren's value. But yeah, I think if they're trading for Langeliers, their best bet is to just give them as many pitchers as they can and focus on that, which they have. You know, maybe you dip into the farm and do a Ben Hess or a Chase Hampton or something like that. But Langeliers is not going to come cheap, man. That is a really, really, really good catcher So I would think it is going to take a little bit more than that. But I like the idea there. All right.
Will Warren and Garrett Cole for Shea Langley.
now we're talking. It was I don't know if the A's can afford the Garrett Cole contract.
And cash.
Cash, very important. Cash from Cashman.
All right. Any Yankees my last trade, one. Nothing more important than cash.
Very true. My last one. Whether you think this is the best or worst idea, I know it'll get a good reaction. Phillies and Orioles. Ready for this one? Phillies acquire Taylor Ward and Trevor Rogers for Andrew Painter. Taylor Ward and Trevor Rogers, both expiring contracts, but both could certainly help the Philadelphia Phillies. And they say, you know what, Andrew Painter, it's been real. Hopefully you can go figure it out in Baltimore because you're not helping us right now. And I'm Dave Dombrowski, and I don't care about you being a really good pitcher in 2029. I need to win right now. Taylor Ward addresses an obvious hole in left field or right field, probably left field. And Trevor Rogers, even if he doesn't start a playoff game, is certainly better than whatever they're getting out of their five starters right now. So what do you think?
I think the Orioles' current regime says no, because if there's one thing I have learned from watching president of baseball operaciones, Mike Elias, do his operaciones, it's that he likes getting a lot of players at one time.
Yeah. Yes.
It's quantity over quality.
Yeah.
It's acquiring a quintet, a septet, an octet of players. They had a sextet last deadline. They got six guys back from the Padres in the Ramon Laureano, Ryan O'Hearn deal. So that makes me think, yes, they could package their chips together, but Painter.
Yeah.
Just for a pitcher, I can't see the Orioles saying yes to this. If I was the Phillies, I would trade Andrew Painter in a second. I would get rid of that right now. Not that I don't believe in the kid. It's just that by the time he figures it out, I don't think the Phillies are going to be as relevant as they are right now.
Yes. Yeah. And I would just say that I tried to come up with a few other Painter destinations. He's just someone that I imagine some teams view him still as ridiculously valuable and some teams don't. And even within that spectrum, would any of them be willing to trade something valuable for only Andrew Painter? There's real risk there, right? So he's a tough one to figure out, but I do agree with your main point, which is that I think the Phillies probably are going to be willing to move him, which was not. There was a time not long ago when he was one of the only kids that Dombrowski wouldn't trade. I think now that calculus has probably shifted at least a little bit. But I liked this one from the premise of too short-term, like just totally embracing the short-term versus long-term, trying to find that balance. But I agree with you that the Orioles would prefer to get, 10 guys in high A.
There are two things that Michael Jordan and Dave Dombrowski have in common: an oversized sweater and F them kids. Jordan, I have two more for you before we get out of here, just like a little bonus one.
Okay.
The San Diego Padres send Mason Miller, right-handed Division III reliever, to the Pittsburgh Pirates for starting pitcher Bubba Chandler.
I came up with a bunch of like Mason Miller for good.
I wanted to
pitcher.
Get Mason Miller home. I wanted to get him
bring
home.
Him home.
I wanted to send him home to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, man, I like this one. I like this one. I mean, this just like depends entirely on how many of Bubba Chandler's high school football games AJ Preller scouted is probably what this depends on.
Half.
at least have, but
like Bubba Chandler,
did, and he
Bubba
liked,
Chandler
he saw,
is
then,
the oh my god! I didn't even think about this angle. Like Bubba Chandler is the most AJ Preller coded pitcher because he was a shortstop. All AJ Preller wants are shortstops, and Bubba Chandler was a shortstop in high school.
Great point. He's not the only pitcher that is a former shortstop, but That is a great call. I think that if he's trading Mason Miller, as we sort of speculated earlier this week, probably for someone that's a little bit more, I can definitely be really good for you in 2027. And I think Bubba Chandler is, I'm a fan. I'd love to have him on my team, but yep, he sure is. But I think that says more about how many not other awesome starts he's had so far, as much as how good he was the other day. So so I think that this, he would still be going for something a little bit more proven.
All right, one for the road. The New York Mets send center fielder and low-cut t-shirt wearer, Luis Robert Jr., to the Chicago White Sox for utility man Luis Angel Acuña. Control-Z. A Control-Z trade. The flip it and reverse. The Uno reverse card. The undo.
Oh, no. The,
here you go. I mean, why not? Jordan, who says no to this at this point?
The Mets. The Mets say no. I just... Acuña,
he's been really bad.
Whatever. Yeah, he's not. That's not what they need right now. So I do think.
What about if you throw in like a Truman Pauly type?
Wow. Now, oh, Truman. Wow, where'd you get that name?
That was the other guy in the Luis Angel Acuña deal.
I know. Yeah. So I would say that I love the idea of the White Sox bringing Luis Robert Jr. back and him getting to play on a good White Sox team again. Like, I don't think that that's ridiculous, but it is going to have to involve some different players.
Right? Brandon Montgomery much?
God, no way. It would be some prospect that the Mets like more than... like I said, Robert back to the White Sox? I'm listening, but we're going to have to shake this up because the values of some of these other, all of these players has certainly changed since the last time that trade happened. So,
any other trade fodder that's, you know, come through your ears?
I know we're both on calls with people.
I know that we're not rumor merchants, you know, rumor merchants. I had a funny one recently. I was talking to a baseball insider, like someone that works for a team, and I was asking about Reed Detmers. This was like yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the person was like, yeah, 60% chance Reed Detmers gets traded. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then yesterday night, I look and John Heyman has tweeted there's a 60% chance Reed Detmers gets traded. And I was like, how does that happen?
Well, I don't know. Either that person just saw what John Heyman said or everyone's talking to the same people.
No. I heard it first. Maybe. I heard it before John Heyman said it.
Is very strange. I don't know what to make of that. 60%. I think. Ooh, do I agree with that percentage? I don't know. I do think that the Angels are going to do something interesting. Maybe it's Zach Nino to the Red Sox, and we will look absolutely brilliant. Okay. Enough fake trades. If you have fake trades or fake trade feedback, let us know. baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. For now, we're going to take a break. When we return, we'll talk to our pal Yuri about Rintaro, Shohei Ohtani, Munetaka Murakami, and Teruaki Sato, and Foster Griffin? What? We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. How lucky are we to welcome in a special guest, a returning special guest. He's a regular at this point. It's Yuri Karasawa of Yaku Cosmopolitan. Yuri, one of our favorites, joining us from across the globe in Japan. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Jordan and Jake. Always love to come on. And yeah, excited to talk about Rintaro Sasaki and a few other topics pertaining to Japanese baseball.
Yuri, how's tomorrow going? Just give us a preview.
Tomorrow's going good.
We're still on Wednesday. I figured you could give us a Thursday sneak peek.
Yeah, it's only 10 a.m. here, but you know, once the games start coming in, I'll let you know the results and you can play some early props on them.
We would never. That is whoa.
Yeah, it doesn't exist in MPB, so it's okay. You can't bet in Japan.
No, certainly not. But
you know what you can bet on, Jordan? You know what you can bet on?
Yeah.
The Miami Marlins.
Yes, how soon will we be able to take the over on Rintaro Sasaki total bases? Who's to say? But let's get into this incredible development in a story that is already was already remarkable in many respects. And that is the tale of a 21-year-old named Rintaro Sasaki, who has charted a path never really before charted by a Japanese top prospect, and someone we've checked in on over the past few years since he made his bold decision to forego the MPB draft, despite being one of the most accomplished high school hitters in Japanese history. He said, you know what? That's nice, but my dream is to play in MLB, and I have a dream of going and training in the States. And so he went to Stanford for 2 years. He had an okay, relatively decent first season, but I would say a decently disappointing debut, all things considered, considering the hype. But his second year this spring at Stanford was much improved. However, because he is a first baseman and because his numbers were not truly outlandish, his draft stock was, not at the level that maybe he certainly hoped when he first arrived at Stanford. And that really brings us to a decision that he was going to have to make this spring regarding whether he was going to enter the MLB draft and stay stateside, even though he wasn't going to be a high pick, or return to MPB for an offer that I am going to now kick it to Yuri to describe. What was Rintaro's option to return to MPB after originally foregoing the MPB draft out of high school?
Yeah, so Rintaro Sasaki, everyone thinks because he skipped the MPB draft in 2023, this guy has no chance to come back to Japan. But last season, MPB changed their draft eligibility rules to allow for Japanese players at overseas colleges to get drafted. He didn't, file his papers for the MPB draft, but he was eligible to be selected. So in the first round, big shock, two teams in the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks and Yokohama DeNA BayStars both nominate him with their first round pick. And then the way the MPB draft works, you go to a lottery, the Hawks win that lottery. So what ends up happening is until July, Sasaki had the opportunity to see where he goes in the MLB draft and then decide, does he want to sign with SoftBank or does he want to go to the MLB team that selects him? And I think, again, this was not really a possibility that a lot of us were expecting when he first skipped the 2023 draft. And he's, not the first to do this, but like you said, he is the most high profile by far. He had set the unofficial all-time high school home run record with 140. He was probably the best hitting prospect since Kotaro Kiyomiya in 2017. And that was the year Munetaka Murakami was in that draft class too. So the Hawks, they are by far the biggest franchise in Japan. They actually topped 12 MLB teams last year in revenue. So they are a true giant, not just in Japan, but in world sports, because Masayoshi Son, the owner of SoftBank Group, is a tech billionaire. So in terms of the offer they were able to make Sasaki, of course, there are limits to how big of a signing bonus you can get, but it was going to be upwards of $1 million. Plus, I'm sure they could have put in a lot of different guarantees and incentives from his for his rookie contract and stuff. Whereas the Marlins are obviously, his signing bonus ends up being $210,000. So in terms of the money, he could have got five times more with SoftBank. He had the chance for, immediate stardom. He could have been in MPB, end of this year, start of next year at the very latest. And then he had a very good shot at, establishing himself as one of the better sluggers in Japan, but instead he chooses to grind it out in the minors. So that's why this decision is so big. It's not really a surprise, I guess, in hindsight, when you consider he first went to the US to pursue this dream. And I was just sort of under the impression that, hey, if we're thinking logically, like he's not going to get more money if he's an eighth round pick. So, hey, if he's not going to go in the first four MLB draft rounds, maybe he's going to just come back to Japan. But as it turns out, he had his, he's sticking to his guns and staying in the U.S.
So what's so compelling, there's a million compelling things, but one of the more interesting components of this is that when he comes over to the States,
I think a cynic, a realist would say this is a financially driven decision. That his overall earning capacity stateside with NIL money at Stanford attached, with the degree, all of it combined, he was kind of set to make more money here. But that changed over the last year or so, where instead of chasing what we thought to be the money, he is chasing the dream over the immediate payday. That switch in, and let's just be clear, the whole time he has said, I'm here for the dream, you know? But the switch in that dynamic, how has that been received back home?
I think Japanese fans are actually pretty positive about his decision. Even SoftBank fans, surprisingly, when he first made this decision, they gave him a good luck chant at the game on the day of. So they said, you know, good luck and hope you do well, despite the fact that there's no compensation picks actually in MPB. So SoftBank just wasted its first round pick. They threw it away. They had this huge gamble that they're going to get the star talent, and they didn't get it. So I will say, you know, it's probably not a coincidence that SoftBank and DeNA are two of the more like analytically driven teams in MPB. SoftBank certainly has the most financial capacity, and there's kind of like a running meme that their first round picks are usually busts anyway. So they probably could have afforded to take this risk. But still, like, they wanted him to come. They did everything they possibly could, I think, in their pitch to him. He had toured their facilities a couple weeks ago. Rintaro had a lot of good things to say. The posting system thing is obviously like a big holdup in this, because SoftBank is the only MPB team that doesn't post, although they made a few comments that kind of hinted at maybe we'll be willing to make an exception. Like, we don't know like what that clause looked like. But yeah, I think when you consider like the financial ramifications, it is kind of comparable, I guess, to Roki Sasaki. Obviously, they go over at a different time, but like Roki could have waited two more years and potentially been like worth hundreds of millions, but he decides to pursue MLB at 23. He had the posting clause. And, you know, maybe long term, if he makes it, then yeah, of course, the MLB payday is going to be a lot better. But he is passing up on a lot of money short term. And maybe that's okay, because he has so many sponsorships and endorsements with like huge companies, you know, ASICS, Japan Airlines, that it probably doesn't really concern him. But I think it's very clear, like, Rintaro, his number one goal is to make it to the big leagues, and that's what he's doing.
Maybe the dude just wants to spend time in Beloit, Wisconsin, Yuri. You know, maybe the high A Beloit Sky Carp, it's just too alluring of a proposition for him to turn it down. I just, Jordan, I'll let you ask a question in a second. Like, can he go back? Like, let's say he hits for a year, 2 years in the minors, and is not very good. What is the process that would allow Rintaro to head back to MPB? Obviously, it wouldn't be for the same number that he turned down, but like, what does that mechanism look like?
Yeah, so he totally can still come back to MPB if he flames out, but he would have to re-enter the draft, and obviously he would be a little bit older. It's not like the old days where you had the Junichi Tozawa rule in place, which basically blackballed players who made this decision from coming back to MPB, which is why so many people just they were discouraged from doing so, because if you were a Japanese player who skipped the MPB draft, you would have to wait 2-3 years to be able to sign with an MPB team, which just kind of is career ending at that point. Tozawa, actually, once they lifted that rule, he entered the MPB draft, but he was in his 30s at that point, so nobody selected him. And I think there is also going to be some, you know, element of like, hey, you already turned us down. You know, it's like there's probably going to be, he didn't burn that bridge, but he kind of was given an olive branch from, you know, SoftBank in terms of, you skip the 2023 draft. It's like, hey, if you still want to come back, we'll give you another chance. But he still didn't want it. So I think his sights are really just set on making it in the big leagues. Could he still play in MPB eventually? Yes. But I think his sights are pretty clear. And, you know, he was doing everything in terms of MLB Draft League, in terms of Cape Cod League. Like, he has been preparing for this for a long time, despite the kind of, you know, shaky results on the field.
One hint now that I'm thinking about, Jordan, is his English. Like, his English skills. Yeah. I went and we've talked about this. Like, I went and talked to him when he first came over and was playing in the draft league. And even like conversing wasn't really doable. I mean, his English was obviously better than my Japanese. But now you see him and he's like borderline fluent. And it's like that only happens if you're like, I'm going to be living here for a while. I might want to learn the GH sound, you know?
Well, and I'm sure that it's easier for someone that is willing to embrace it at a younger age to pick it up and to be at a place like Stanford for 2 years. I mean, he clearly, personality wise, and this is the other thing why now, and you sort of have hinted at this here, it's like, well, duh, like this guy's already been trying something different the whole time. We shouldn't be surprised that I can make the same jokes that Jake's making about all the random minor league towns that he's now going to go bounce around in. But I think the dude probably likes living in America, right? And not that he wouldn't like the attention and the stardom of going back home, but I think he's become really comfortable here and is enjoying continuing to ingrain in this culture while also chasing this dream that he's been very clear about for the entire time. And so in that sense, I think it's not that surprising. But from a personality standpoint, was that always obvious with him? How much did his background, of course, going to the same high school as Ohtani and Kikuchi, I have to imagine with having Ohtani as a hero, even if he's not on that level talent-wise, Ohtani also, at many points along the way, has basically said, I'm doing it my way, like, you're not stopping me. And there are some parallels with that with Rentaro. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And you know, every major decision this guy has made so far has kind of gone against the grain, gone against convention. And he said at his press conference in his home prefecture of Iwate last week, even if this path ends in failure, I don't want to live with regrets. And I think his father really plays a big part of this because Hiroshi Sasaki, of course, managed Ohtani, Kikuchi, and his son. And when he first decided to go stateside, he was stressing, like, you know, I want Rentaro to develop not just as a baseball player, but also as like a human being and sort of be, you know, dynamic in that sense of not just being a pure athlete, but also having the education side and having the ability to adapt. And I agree, like maybe he had better offers from bigger baseball programs than Stanford, but you're not going to get much better than like the duality of like that program's academics, the baseball. They're in, you know, Bay Area, proximity to Japan, and he has been very good at acclimating. You see him doing a lot of interviews now, both with Japanese media and, you know, like American content creators, and he seems comfortable. So I think that he is just, this has been something he's had his sights set on for a while, and maybe, you know, people like myself were a little bit too thinking in the kind of logical sense of, oh, hey, he's going to get more money in Japan, so he probably will return. But that's just not how this guy operates.
My last question, Rentaro-wise, is what does this mean going forward? Is he a blip? Is he an outlier? Or is he a sign of things to come? Is he a harbinger of a new relationship between Japanese baseball in American baseball? Are we going to see more and more guys coming over to college to try this path, or is he just one of a kind?
I think he is the first of many, and that creates a problem for MPB, because for MPB, that means the potential of losing a lot of amateur players that could, you know, in previous years would have been a lock to just enter MPB. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think MPB teams need to make a better case for why their players should start in their, you know, domestic league. The posting system, obviously, like making changes to that plays a big part, because I do think a lot of these guys are driven by the fact that, hey, if I want to go to MLB before I'm 25, then I can't really do that through MPB unless you're a superstar prospect like Roki and you can get that posting clause, which only a few teams are willing to give. But, you know, already we see Shotaro Mori, who signed directly with the A's. He said he was inspired by Rentaro to skip the MPB draft and kind of pursue this dream. It's a different path, obviously, because he didn't go to college, but he's one example. And then Genmei Sato transferring to Penn State this year, was going to be the top prospect of top pitching prospect of the MPB draft. And now he has, you know, MLB draft eligibility. So a lot of like different avenues are opening up, not necessarily the exact one that Rentaro took, but this idea that you don't have to start your career in MPB to become a very, you know, potentially successful Japanese player. I do think the eventual outcome of his career, though, will dictate how it's viewed in the public. I think based on his own comments, maybe success on the field isn't how he will judge his own career, right? Let's say he fails. He's already said he doesn't want to live with regrets. He wants to challenge himself. He wants to push himself. He probably is going to be content with knowing that if his career does, you know, flame out. But from a public perception standpoint, especially people in Japan, they're going to say, hey, if this guy doesn't pan out, he was the number one prospect in Japan as a high schooler. He could have just come to MPB and you know, been a more guaranteed kind of star talent. So I think as he first step one is making it to the major leagues, but step two is being an actual, you know, good player. Doesn't have to be like an all-star, but I think that kind of ability, that's going to change a lot of the perception.
You say step one is making it to the majors. There are so many steps before step one that I'm fascinated by. There are so many ways. How long is he going to be patient with this process? How long are the Marlins going to be patient with this process? So, a team, by the way, we should note, one of two teams ever that has never signed a player directly from MPB. Obviously, this is not that, but this is not a team with a rich history of Japanese players. Yes, Ichiro, 3,000th hit, did happen with the Marlins, and we will never forget that. But, you know, it's not quite the same thing. And when he enters the draft, he had that risk. It was very different than a team other these free agents who are negotiating with these big league teams and can kind of pick where they land. Maybe he had an inkling that the Marlins were a team that were interested in him. I think maybe we'll find out more about that as he talks more publicly. But yeah, man, I mean, there's so much else with Rentaro, but we'll cut it off there. And if people have more specific questions about him, you can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, and we will have, I'm sure Yuri will be back on sometime soon. Or I will just message him and relay accordingly. But let's move to another Hanamaki Higashi graduate. Ohtani did graduate, right? Did he get that degree? Okay, all right, that's good. He didn't drop out before going doing his thing with the Fighters. So I'm going to keep this very broad. We talked plenty about Ohtani on the show. He has had an interesting little swerve over the last couple of weeks with this knee injury that has prevented him from pitching. But he threw a bullpen today, and at least seems like he'll be maybe back on the mound soon. Let's just keep it simple. What do you make of this season for Ohtani? Him chasing the Cy Young, his body kind of telling him, hey, dude, slow down. You're getting up there in age. You can't just do all this baseball all the time. And as always, we like to ask you what has been certainly back home. They're watching his every step. But how has his latest attempts to be the greatest baseball player of all time been received? And what do you make of it as a ball knower yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly argue it's one of his best seasons, but of course he has so many seasons that are like in contention for like greatest ever that that's not really a surprise. I think for him personally, he is probably going to be kicking himself. The fact that he's, you know, getting further and further from this Cy Young, this is probably his best chance to do it. But the injuries, it's just going to be very hard for him to probably ever get that Cy Young, but he's proving that he is a world-class pitcher despite that. I mean, if he finishes the season with 100-something innings, sub-2 ERA, it's just like, I mean, what are we doing here? And this is kind of a down year for him offensively, and yet still, you know, top five on the WRC Plus leaderboard. So just goes to show you, like, for superstar players, it's not just, like, the ceiling. It's also just having that floor, that longevity, and he's doing that. In Japan, I think we are getting to the point where people are, I think, a little bit numb to just how great he is. Like, of course, he's still always on the news. He's still all over the place on every, you know, ad, every billboard. But I think, like, when, you know, 2021, 2022, and then 2023 with, like, the WBC, I think that's really when, like, Ohtani mania peaked. It's still really, really high, but people are just like, okay, we get it. You're amazing.
Do something else. Mix it up. Yeah. Find a new bit.
And I think that kind of sentiment probably goes in both countries. But yeah, I mean, what can we say?
Well, maybe this is actually a good transition, because how much does it matter that now we just got a lot of other Japanese superstars? I mean, not only does he have his teammates and Yamamoto and what he did, and plenty we talk about him, and Roki is just like his own drama on a weekly basis, but Murakami and Okamoto both coming over and doing some pretty cool stuff for teams that, again, also another teams that did not necessarily have the rich Japanese history. Tatsuya Imai has obviously been a little bit rockier, but he's at least shown some signs of life recently where it's not been a complete disaster. But Murakami in particular, and Okamoto, but Murakami because of how well the White Sox are also playing. Is he someone that has now captured a new audience? Are people rallying behind the White Sox? Early on in the season, we were making jokes about how the White Sox suck and the Swallows, who we played for, they suck. So yeah, there's this perfect marriage of these two fan bases that are just used to sucking. But now it's a little bit different. I also know that the Swallows, I think, are having a shockingly competent season. But have the White Sox kind of gained some steam because Murakami is so popular?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of new White Sox fans in Japan. And I think Murakami is the story of 2026, certainly in Japan. I know, had that prolonged injury for about a month. But then I think it really helped that he did the home run derby because, of course, he was, only the second Japanese player to do that after Ohtani. So kind of putting himself in the limelight again. And I know he hasn't homered since returning from that injury, but still, when we talked about him in the off season, we mentioned him as this kind of extremely volatile three true outcomes machine who has a super high ceiling but pretty low floor. We're seeing the upside, right? This is the high outcome that we were expecting, and this is kind of that Nick Kurtz rookie type year. Where Murakami, I mean, I think the biggest surprise to me is he's still maintaining a 19% walk rate, which that's just incredible to me. That was the one part where it was a little bit harder to know it. How well is that going to translate? The hit tool is, still an issue, obviously. The power is legit, but the third variable there being, the chase rate and his discipline, is he going to start pressing a little too much if he struggles? I mean, he is walking more than he even did in Japan. So it's just Murakami, the approach, I think, is just phenomenal. He's having a phenomenal time there. I think everybody can see that in Japan. Helps to have that Riku Nishida was able to make his debut this year as well, having another Japanese talent there to get even more Japanese fans kind of interested in the South Side. But yeah, I mean, he's been incredible. And Okamoto, maybe not quite the same highs, but he has over 20 homers as well. And then Imai, every now and then we see the glimpses, and he was another one who was going to be volatile and going to have kind of ups and downs. I think next season will be a bit of a better test for him.
If I had known that Murakami was going to be rocking that hair that he's been going with, I think I would have evaluated him a little bit differently. It's incredible. I mean, he's got the flaps up in the back. It's like he's spiking it. We had Ohtani making fun of him earlier this year. When the two teams played from across the dugout, he was doing the hair. The way that Murakami has moved within the American baseball space has been very impressive, particularly in contrast to Imai, who has had these very public struggles and difficulties. And I think that Murakami has done a very good job kind of ingratiating himself both into the White Sox fan culture and into the team itself. I want to stick with another 2026 All-Star, if you don't mind, and ask about Foster Griffin. Foster Griffin, Washington Nationals southpaw, one of the top 25 pitchers in Major League Baseball right now, spent the last three seasons in NPB pitching for the Yomiuri Giants, came over the winter, joined the Nats on, I believe, a one-year, $5 million deal, and has been sublime. Where were you at on Foster Griffin heading into this season? Has he surprised you? Has he surpassed expectations?
Oh, he's definitely surpassed expectations. But I have to say, before the before he signed with the Nationals, I said that I like him better than Cody Ponce. I like him better than Anthony Kay. Like, I thought this guy has all the talent necessary to be a competent pitcher at the major league level, maybe back into the rotation, but he has been everything and that. In MPB, he injuries that kind of, you know, made his innings totals not as impressive, but he was rocking, you know, 25% strikeout rate, really low walk rates. In 2025, he added a sweeper that really kind of elevated his game to the next level. And, you know, in 2025, it was only 13 starts, but he had a 1.62 ERA in Japan. So I think Griffin, his ability to just kind of kitchen sink, if you just look at his pitch blot, I mean, he covers it so well. His pitch ability is incredibly high. Yeah. Yeah.
And, he's just throwing eight pitches. I mean,
yeah. And I think that is kind of the quality that a lot of import pitchers in Japan can learn. It's not necessarily that you get, you know, 10, 20% better by coming to MPB, but it's that ability to, hey, if you're like a 4A guy who's, you know, jumping up and down and you don't have that consistency, you don't have that ability to kind of fail and learn from your mistakes, Japan will, and you know, KBO as well, for guys that have the talent, it gives you that platform to, you know, go out there and throw six or seven innings. Like, give it your, you know, you actually have the chance to pitch, and you're not just going to like get knocked out in the third inning and then get sent back down to AAA and then have this, like, you know, roster management thing going on that's always going to like be a distraction. So there's a lot of guys like that in MPB and KBO now, and there's just going to continue to be more and more, I think. It was really cool. Recently, we saw a photo with Miles Michaelis, Foster Griffin, and Tomoyuki Sugano, three legends of the Omiri Giants.
So we mentioned the guys that maybe, you know, Americans that go stateside and then return. But everyone also wants to know about, you know, the next great Japanese players that could be coming over. I know that I imagine for Japanese fans like yourself who, like, you don't want to see all these guys leave MPB because MPB is still a very important part of your coverage in a league. But, you know, this is just the natural part of this business at this point. So I want to finish talking about two Hanshin Tigers, Teruaki Sato and Shota Morishita, because these were two guys who, if you watch Japan in the WBC, even with their relatively disappointing finish, they certainly made an impression during that tournament. What Sato did last year with the Tigers was unbelievable. Just talk about the seasons that those guys are having and the buzz about the possibilities of either of those guys coming over this year, particularly when this could be a strange offseason for MLB, and how much that is maybe impacting the likelihood of them coming over in 2027.
Yeah, I do think if there is a lockout, that's going to make things quite difficult in terms of like how the contracts look. But Teruaki Sato and Shota Morishita, simply put, these are the two best hitters in Japan right now, and they hit back-to-back in the same lineup. Two very different types of players too, so that's always fun. Sato, primarily a third baseman, but also plays right field. Not great defensively, but what you're going to look at is the offense. He's slashing 324, 405, 617 this year. He was on Triple Crown watch for the first 2.5 months of the season. The home runs have started to kind of cool down. He's been on a bit of a home run drought, but still, I mean, he has an OPS over 1,000. It's a 215 WRC plus. This guy is an absolute superstar hitter. I kind of view him as an in-between of an Okamoto and a Murakami, which is to say he has better contact skills in the zone than a Murakami, but not as good as Okamoto. And then the power upside, I think, you know, 70 grade power, it's better than Okamoto, but it's not like 80 grade like Murakami. His approach is probably the worst of the three. He has some issues chasing outside the zone, and he can kind of get into a funk sometimes, but he is a really, really good talent. And you saw that in the WBC, he roped a double off of Ranger Suarez. And when he actually got that opportunity to start, he made the most of it. Morishita is like a really good all-rounder, great defensively in the outfield. He doesn't strike out. He, you know, has the power. And he's only 25, whereas Sato is 27. So I think if we're looking right now at this offseason or next year, Sato is the one who's likely going to get posted. Of course, Hanshin wants to hold on to both of them. They don't have to post either, but they're going to want to stagger it if these guys are eventually going to go to MLB. Mm-hmm. So I think Sato would probably get posted first, and then in 2 to 3 years' time, Morishita, to me, is kind of on like the Seiya Suzuki trajectory. But I mean, it's his like clutch gene. Like, he has so many go-ahead hits and walk-off home runs this year. He filled in for Suzuki after he got injured in the WBC, and he hit that 3-run homer as well, which gets forgotten because they lost that game. But these guys are really, really great talents. And again, Sato being a lefty, Morishita being a righty, it's just like they complement each other so well for the Tigers.
So those are definitely names to know. That is a good point that, yeah, why would they? There's no way they're both coming over at the same time because the Tigers, I mean, listen, I would hold on to them too if they can. Yuri, oh yeah?
I have one last kind of CBA baseball labor question for you, Yuri. You know, when you look at, Jordan's cracking up at me. When you look at like the history of champions in the NPB, and you look at the Hawks, who we talked about earlier, who won, 6 and 7 years from 2014 to 2020, lost in the final in 24, won in 25. The way that people in the States are talking about the Dodgers right now as this like untouchable juggernaut that will never be toppled and is ruining the sport. Were people saying similar things about the Hawks? Are they saying similar things about the Hawks in Japan? Are there things being done to try and mitigate the power and the money that they're using? I know that the two systems are wildly different, but I couldn't help but notice when looking at the champions and figured I had you on, so I'd ask.
No, you're absolutely right. Like they get compared to the Dodgers all the time. You know, similar to how Yomiuri was always compared to the Yankees. I think with the Hawks, again, the other part of the, like the Dodgers equation is like people do like fans of the other, you know, 11 teams do really hate the Hawks. You know, maybe not as much hate as like the Dodgers get, but the Hawks are definitely among the most hated teams right there with the Giants, but they are also the ones like capable of saving the league, saving the sport. In fact, I would say they're the only ones like on that vanguard event for MPB in terms of they actually pay free agents close to what they're worth. They have, you know, a deep farm system almost comparable to MLB. They have 4 farm teams that actively play games all season long. No other MPB team does that. They have excellent kind of analytics department. And they're even doing in recent years, signing like 15, 16 year old Dominicans and developing them in their deep farm system. So the SoftBank Hawks, I think, are kind of the model franchise in MPB, despite the fact that everyone hates them. And not everyone can match that as far as, you know, not everyone has Masayoshi's son as their, you know, team owner. Not everyone has revenue. Not everyone has that budget where they're, you know, 2x-ing the next closest team in revenue and budget. But I do think that was the other thing with Rintaro, where people are going to look at that decision and say, oh, you know, if you're not familiar with MPB, you might say, hey, you know, he wants to have that like stardom in the money with, you know, going to the big leagues. But it's like SoftBank is one of the only teams you could say outside of MLB that match or exceed, certainly, you know, no disrespect to the Marlins, but they are obviously small market.
No, disrespect the Marlins. Disrespect the Marlins. Like, I think that is an important point to end on. Like, the Hawks are making more money than the Marlins.
Yeah.
like that are. Is difficult for our American-centric brains, I think, and a lot of the listeners to wrap their heads around. And maybe it's not that simple. Who knows how the books are being cooked, et cetera, et cetera. But the Hawks arguably have more fans around the world than the Marlins do. And yet, Rintaro wants that Beloit cuisine. Yuri, thank you for joining us. Tell people where they can see your work, read your work, hear your work, experience your work.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I write about Japanese baseball on japanball.com and World Baseball Network. And you can find MPB stats and visualizations on my website, yakucosmo.com. And then you can always find all of my latest stuff on Twitter, X, at yakucosmo.
Best of the business, Yuri. Thank you so much. And I'm sure you'll be back at some point soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It is a day that starts with fries.
So it's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. If you're new here, here's the deal. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing ugly from the week that was. What is ugly? Who can say? Something odd, something weird, something different, something reminiscent of Marlins, Braves, Giants, Nats, second baseman Dan Ugla. Did I leave any teams out?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Not, well, I guess the D-backs drafted
University
him,
of Memphis. So. University of Memphis.
and Memphis. Yeah.
And Memphis.
They
Jordan.
They do deserve some credit.
Start us off, please.
My good this week comes courtesy of White Sox right-hander Davis Martin's Instagram, who posted a photo of one of our favorite people in the game. It's Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty's always been very good to us. And this photo of Eric Fetty seemingly in the White Sox clubhouse is so funny. It is Eric Fetty's Papa Shot that I guess he brought into the clubhouse with a leaderboard showing the high scores from the season so far, most notably including Mr. Fetty himself, who has the high score, and he has listed his name on the leaderboard as Eric, quote, the coldest to ever do it, Fetty.
Which is he does look stuff. Cold in the photo. And
he does. He does look like he's shivering. We also have – I just love the leaderboard. I mean, the leaderboard itself is honestly more ugly than good. We have Guardians, catcher, outfielder, utility man, David Fry. We have, what is that, D-backs reliever, Ryan Thompson, Billy Cook, the Pirates utility man, and Ellie De La Cruz in the five spot here on the Papa Shot leaderboard. This is my good because I am such a sucker for Papa Shot. In fact, I have come dangerously close to literally purchasing this exact Papa Shot. I have looked at this Papa Shot online and thought I would like to have this in my home, and maybe someday I will. But for now, all I know is that the next time I see Eric Fetty, I look forward to talking to him about this because this is a very funny picture and just makes me happy. So it's good.
I wonder, should we get him on the show next week to do like 10 minutes of Papa Shot chat?
Probably could. Eric's always down, man. That guy's the best.
Let us know. BaseballBarbecast@gmail.com. Do you want Eric Fetty to come on and talk about Papa Shot? Is that the content that your ears desire? Jordan, my one theory about this leaderboard, two guys on this list, Ryan Thompson and Ellie De La Cruz, share what? Very long limbs. Very long arms.
Yes.
They are string beanie lads, which means they are closer to the hoop. And so I think that is the differentiator here. So I, over time, I'd be curious to see if more long-limbed guys need to get Mizorowski on the Papa Shot, Chris Sale on the Papa Shot, Spencer Jones on the Papa Shot. I think that's the secret.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, all the extension kings. Make sure you go try to beat Eric Fetty's high score. Good luck.
My good this week is Braves related. The AAA affiliate for the Atlanta Braves, the Gwinnett Stripers, had a bunch of big leaguers this week. A lot of rehabbing folks, a lot of respectfully over the hill individuals. Their lineup, this was on Tuesday night, I believe. Ronald Acuna Jr. in the leadoff spot. Ha-Sung Kim batting second. Carlos Santana batting third. Rowdy Tellez in the four hole. And Andrew McCutchen in the sixth spot. Incredible. I believe they had a lineup later in the week with more guys with big league time. This Tuesday lineup, 58 years of combined MLB service time and two former MVPs in the lineup. Now, the reason that this is good is not just that like a bunch of people in Gwinnett got to see legendary baseball players up close. It's that the gentleman in the five spot in this lineup, a relative no-name, not a household person, Patrick Kloesy in center field for the Atlanta Braves, AAA affiliate. Who the F is this guy? Patrick Kloesy hitting in a line, hitting ahead of Andrew McCutchen? Patrick Kloesy was drafted out of St. Louis University in the 11th round in the 2024 MLB draft. He is a speed merchant, a demon on the sacks. He had 79 swipes last year, split between two levels, stole 22 more in 21 games in the Arizona Fall League this season. He has 43 steals in 78 games. But the most important thing about Patrick Kloese, I played in college with his brother.
That is the most important thing. Number one.
For those of you watching on YouTube, I'm holding up a picture of the 2016 Washington University Bears, and you can't see any of the guys' faces, but I promise you there's a guy in there that looks like Patrick Kloese. Shouts out to my buddy Matt, who was a bullpen mate of mine. Matt and Pat, and there was like three other brothers. And you know when you're playing with a guy and the dude's like, I mean, you didn't play, so you don't know this. But if you're playing baseball with someone and they're like, you know, my younger brother's like way better than me. And you're like, all right, man, like that's sick. Congrats, dude. And Matt used to say that, but he was right because he's hitting above Andrew McCutchen. So shouts out to Pat Kloese and the AAA Braves.
And my younger brother who's listening to this is like, what the hell? I'm better than Jordan at baseball. Why didn't Jordan say that about me?
That's true. I don't think that's true.
I just got to say, this lineup is so amazing. It's, yes, you have rehabbers like Acuna and Kim. Andrew McCutchen and Carlos Santana are just, they're just hanging on. They're not rehabbing. They just don't want to go home. These two guys rank 1 and 3 among active players in major league games played. Okay. No, Andrew McCutchen has played more games than any other active player. Carlos Santana is third. Freddie Freeman is the one sandwiched between those two. And they are just hanging out in Gwinnett with Patrick. Just Kloese.
Can't let go.
Really something. Really, really, really something. All right. Let's go.
Might be time to go.
My bad is, the Miami Marlins have lost 9 games in a row. Now, this has been a very strange couple of months for the Marlins. I think that is also a team we could maybe be having some interesting conversations about. I tried to cook up a Sandy Alcantara trade for our fake trade Friday, but I couldn't quite come up with one that I was satisfied with. That said, remember, folks, this team went 20-6 in June. Best team in baseball. Not only did they go 20-6 in June, just earlier this month, they swept the A's and swept the Mariners in consecutive series. But since then, swept by the Guards, swept by the Brewers, and now swept by the Astros. And all of their gains made in their playoff odds, which got up over like 50% at one point, have now crashed back down to closer to 10%. And that's probably where they always belonged. But for a fighting fish team that was certainly flying high there for several weeks, this is quite the whiplash of back down to 500. This is really something.
If there's one thing I learned by reading Anthony Bourdain's books, it's that fish goes bad quick. It can turn on you in a second. You know, you can't leave Marlin out. It'll lose 9 in a row.
Yeah, I guess that's why I don't like seafood. All right, what's bad for you?
I was going to talk about Jose Caballero's tired act, of which I am unbelievably sick of, but I don't want to be dragged into that abyss. So I'm going to pivot a little bit, and I'm going to talk about Kyle Freeland and Andres Chaparro. For those of you who did not see this, Andres Chaparro, who this week in a tweet I described as a combination of Max Muncy and Riff Raff. Feel good about that. Andres Chaparro flew out to center field, a sack fly that pushed a runner to third base. As he was jogging off the mound, he barely grazes the back of the Coors Field mound. I would say his foot is about 7 inches, maybe 5 inches on the dirt side of the back of the mound. Not a part of the mound that Kyle Freeland or any Rockies pitcher, anyway, or any pitcher at all, would ever use for pitching.
Yep.
It is the back of the mound. Kyle Freeland lost his top, screaming, "Get off the effing mound," at Chaparro. "Stay off the effing mound. That's my effing mound. Come on. Have some respect one time." This is obviously all via Jonathan Boy. You went right across the mound, brother. Come on. And then the bench is cleared and Chaparro just walked out and Freeland just kept yelling at him. Here's why this is bad. He didn't run across the mound. He was like an inch and a half over the mound. He ran across the back of the mound. The flip side is that mound is more Kyle Freeland's mound than any mound in the sport is anyone's mound. That dude has pitched more for the Rockies than any other human in the history of the franchise. Now, has he pitched particularly well for a lot of that? Maybe, maybe not. But what was endearing about this to me is Kyle Freeland's like, you know how much crap I had to go through on this mound? You know how many fly balls turned into home runs? You know how many singles blooped in front of a bad defense? You know how many bad Rockies games I've had to live through on this mound? Andres Chaparro walked 2 inches to the other side. I thought this was hilarious. Yeah. It was bad because Freeland just kept going. Like, he didn't have to keep going. It's like, hey, next time, just be kind. Lead with kindness. Excuse me, Mr. Chaparro. Would you mind next time walking a little bit further onto the grass as to not go on my mound? Thank you. Please. Instead, he led with anger. And I think that's a lesson for all of us.
Totally agree. I thought this video was so silly. Not the first, just for those who are like totally thrown off by this. This is a thing that pitchers have gotten mad about when guys run across the mound. Like this, there is historical precedent for that. But to Jake's point, if you watch the video, and the most generous interpretation for Kyle Freeland is that he straight up didn't see, like he thought he was walking over the mound a lot more than he actually was and then just lost it. That's the most generous interpretation. Because if he actually saw where Chaparro was stepping and this was his genuine reaction, I just can't even begin to fathom it. Because to your point, it is so far away from any part of the mound that means anything to the pitcher. So, but no, I think your other point is great. It's true. That is truly his mound.
His mound.
So
it's his mound.
Maybe Chaparro should show some more respect. All right. My ugly this week is just a little nugget to monitor for the rest of the season. I wrote about the Red Sox and Orioles series, and I wrote about Jake Bennett, who has been a very good rookie pitcher for them. Jake Bennett joining a rotation that is already overflowing with left-handers, and that is even with Garrett Crochet not being able to pitch, with, of course, the likes of Peyton Tolley, who we mentioned, and Connelly Early, and now Patrick Sandoval is back, and Ranger Suarez, who they just signed. The Red Sox have used a left-handed starting pitcher. Oh, Eduardo Rivera, by the way, that didn't go so well. He opened for Bayo, but it counts as a start. 75 of their games this year have been started by a left-handed pitcher. That is so far and away the most of any team in the league. Second, the Washington Nationals down at 47. But I was curious, are they on pace for the most left-handed starts in a single season ever? And the answer is maybe, but probably not. They're going to come pretty freaking close. The record is the 1983 Yankees, 127 starts by left-handed pitchers. So if the Red Sox use lefties for literally every other game for the rest of the year, then yes, they would break that record. But I don't think that they will. But I do think that they're going to come close. Only two teams ever have had more than 120. So yes, this is, if it does seem weird to have a rotation of this full of lefties, the answer is you're correct. This is not normal whatsoever. And it's amazing that they keep spawning more lefties like Jake Bennett to keep this bit up, even though Garrett Crochet and Early and Ranger Suarez keep getting injured.
I like the idea that they only did this to try and mitigate the Yankees left-handed heavy lineup at Yankee Stadium. It's like, okay, why did we lose in the wild card round? Well, the Yankees had a lot of lefties with the short porch. What if we only lefties? What if only lefties?
What if only lefties? And as long as they keep stopping. Have you seen how unbelievable Brian Bayo has been in this non-starter role? especially if you can maintain that while also keeping up this lefties only bit. Sonny Gray, you can keep doing your thing. But other than that, I hope we only see lefties for the rest of the season for the Boston Red Sox.
Jordan, you're a theater kid.
Oh,
let's talk about theater. We got musical news. Did you see this?
Oh, we did. We did. Yes. This is something. This is really something.
OMG.
Jose Iglesias, he of the OMG Mets, Latin music superstar, and I guess retired infielder.
He has not played baseball
last
this year.
Season.
He did last What'd year, you say? Yes. He has not played this year. He did play last season, but he has not played baseball this year.
He played in 112 games last year for the San Diego Padres. And this year, zero. But he will be taking the stage once again as a member of the cast of Buena Vista Social Club, a legitimately hit musical. This is not, it's just like some off-Broadway production and he's like kind of be a part of it. Like, my understanding is that this is one of the biggest shows on Broadway right now, getting a lot of big pub. I think it won, let's see, I have it right in front of me, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Tony Awards last year. It is about a group of musicians in Cuba between the 50s and the 1990s, and within the rise of communism under Fidel Castro and kind of how music shapes them. Jose Iglesias, who is Cuban, feels like a natural fit. And he's just going to like be, I believe, the role of the narrator. Like, there's a great article in The Athletic where Evan Drellick, of all freaking people, who usually covers, you know, labor stuff and like Rob Manfred and like is the one that wrote this. I don't understand now that I'm thinking about it. I don't understand how or why. I need to ask Evan why he ended up writing this. That might be the most ugly part of this that there is.
I agree. I agree, but also I kind of love that for Evan. What a nice reprieve from CBA talks to write about Jose Iglesias on Broadway. That's great.
Quote from Iglesias, I lost some sleep. I'm not going to lie. Just like we're going to face an ace and a good pitcher in the playoffs, that type of energy, that type of adrenaline, that's how it feels. It was tough, but in a good way. This is really cool. Like, good for Jose Iglesias. This crossover is great. I want to go see this. Do you want to? Like, when does he start? We're going to be in New York in a couple weeks. Should we try and go see
Jose
Iglesias in Buena Vista Social Club?
After the trade deadline.
Oh, August 27th. His debut will come August 27th. Set to be the first Latino Major League Baseball player to perform on Broadway.
All right. Well, maybe we can work something out in September. We will see how often he will be performing as part of this. But Jose Iglesias, already one of the stranger careers that we've ever seen, now will add to it. I hope that they can find a way to designate this Broadway performance on his already fascinating baseball reference page, which is a real journey to review the ups and downs of Jose Iglesias. All right, before we get out of here, let's preview the weekend. Oh my God, they're playing more baseball. What are they? Jeez, take a rest, folks. Can you believe they play this silly sport every day? Best series of the weekend. The Braves are in Baltimore. That's important. More for the Birds than the Braves, but I know you're going to maybe get a look at them. Dodgers and Mets, I bring that one up because that was probably going to be a much more marquee series than maybe it ends up being. But hey, if you're in New York, you want to go see the Dodgers, hop on the Game Time app and go get you some tickets. I bet they're a little cheaper than they would have been if the Mets were actually good at baseball. So if you want to go see the Dodgers in town, that is a good opportunity there. Yankees at Phillies is another one that will certainly be billed as a, World Series preview. If really everything goes super well, maybe kind of. Who knows? But the Yankees and Phillies, that is in Philadelphia. Cubs at Pirates, all the NL Central series are very important. Royals and Tigers started a 4-game set last night. Tigers took that one. Every Tigers game is important, as we know. Any other series that have your attention this weekend?
Angels, Giants. I'll be locked into that.
Yeah. Will ya?
Every pitch.
That's good. That's going to be a good use of your time. I would say also Blue Jays, Red Sox. That is one that I know the Red Sox streak ended. The Blue Jays avoided getting mocked yesterday, thankfully. But let's see, because Toronto, the buzz is certainly trending towards Sellers. Boston flying high. Could that be a trap series for the Red Sox of Boston? Blue Jays playing
feels like
well
the Red Sox
see what happens.
Been playing at Fenway now for a month straight.
I know. So quite the homestand there. We will see how that goes. All right, we're done. Thank you again to Yuri for joining us, talking all things Rentaro and Japanese baseball. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for cooking up some fake trades on this Fake Trade Friday. Let us know what you think on baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We are in deadline mode. Remember, folks, we have our live trade deadline special a week from Monday on deadline day, August 3rd. So you can look forward to that. Make sure you're subscribed to the new Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel to get all things Barbacast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. Everyone have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you all soon.